go ahead and get started this morning. We've got a lot to talk about. Today we're going to be talking about power games with your kids, and I'm going to hit the first half of the lesson today on power games with younger kids, and then Daryl's going to hit power games with your older kids, your teenagers. And getting ready for this lesson, I realized real quickly there's a lot more power games that go on than what we're going to be able to cover today. So we're just going to try to hit some highlights and hit maybe what's most common to everybody. Does anybody remember the 80s sitcom show, Who's the Boss? Anybody watch that show? You had a, did anybody really, really like it, really into it? A few? And you had a lady who was some sort of high-powered executive. I don't remember what she did, advertising or something. And so she's got a lot of money, but she's a single parent. She's away from the house a lot. So she hires Tony Danza to come in and run the house, clean the house. And then there's always this struggle of who's the boss? Is it her or is it him? And they're not married. And anyhow, it was kind of funny, but like a lot of 80s shows, when you go back and watch them now, they seem to be pretty cheesy. But, you know, it seemed good when it first came out. Not so good maybe now, but anyhow, that was the question of every episode, the underlying question, who's the boss? And we're going to ask that question today, too. In your family, who's the boss? Is it you, the parents, or is it the kids? And what I see, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but what I see in a lot of families where the parents are about my age, they've got younger kids, is it doesn't seem like the parents are the boss. The parents may want to be the boss. They may know that they should be the boss, but in reality, the kids are the boss. And we see that sometimes even here at church. We'll watch parents bring their kids in, and they're dragging their kids in by the arm, and you think any moment that shoulder's just going to get dislocated, you know. And the kid's going limp like a noodle and screaming and yelling, and you wonder who is in charge in that family. You know, at this point in time, it certainly looks like the kid is the boss and not the parent. So we're going to talk about that today. Who's the boss in your family? Kids from a young age will start playing power games with you. Anybody know what I mean by power games? I see a lot of heads nodding up and down. Kids start this at an early age. Sometime between 12 and 15 months old, your kid will start playing power games with you, trying to figure out, are you the boss, dad and mom? Or can I be the boss? Because I want to be the boss. And so it starts really young. People don't really understand how early it is. You know, you might think, well, when they turn in 12, 13, 14, they're going to start playing power games. Well, they probably are, but it starts when they're 1 year old. They'll play power games. And here's a tip for you. The longer the power game continues, the more likely the kid will win and you will lose. You know, I wish I could do a Barney Fife impression. Anybody watch Andy Griffith? Because one of his things was he's always telling Andy, you got to nip it in the bud. Nip it in the bud. Okay, well, power games are like that. You got to nip it in the bud. If you don't control it and win this contest when your kid is little, you are just headed down a road of danger and just chaos, destruction. It's going to be bad. So you need to win it early. Before we start talking about them, let's open up in prayer. Father God, I pray that you would be with me as I present this lesson today, Lord, and be with all of us. Lord, give us wisdom and courage to deal with our kids, to win the power game in a way that you want us to win it, Lord. Not so that we can be mean to our kids or push them down, but so we can help instruct them in a godly way. We can teach them how to be responsible Christian adults, Lord. And so to that end, Lord, we need to know how to win this power game because we love our kids and we want the best for them, God. Pray that you would be with each of us, Lord. Help us to really look at our lives, look at how we're doing our parenting, and see how we can do it better. In Jesus' name, amen. Temper tantrums. Anybody deal with temper tantrums? I hate temper tantrums. I hate it when my kids throw a temper tantrum. I hate it when your kids throw a temper tantrum. Anybody see that? You're out in public and you see a kid in the grocery store going crazy, and it's just everything I can do to not go over there and do something to the kid that I would regret, or say something to the parent that I would regret too. So temper tantrums are just drive me nuts. I can't stand them. Proverbs 20:11 says, even a child is known by his actions, by whether his conduct is pure and right. People, when you're out in public, you're at church, wherever you are, we can see your what your kids do. I can see when you bring your kids into church what kind of kid he is. And rightly or wrongly, people will look at how your kids behave and they're going to judge you too. So they're not only judging your kid by how he acts, they're judging you by how he acts. And maybe that's not fair, but that's the way it is. People are looking at you and they're seeing they're thinking, what kind of parent is that? Just let their kids go crazy, you know? And so that may not be the right thing. They may not understand the situation of the day, but that's certainly what they're thinking. So how do you deal with a temper tantrum? Well, I've got a couple things here that's not going to help. Begging the child to stop won't help. Here's a news flash for you. Your parent doesn't, or your kid doesn't care what you, the parent, feels or thinks or wants. That's why they're doing a temper tantrum in the first place. They have clearly put their own desires way above yours. Begging and pleading with them is just wasting your time. The second thing that won't help is bribing your child. Now, you may get a little bit of short-term relief with this one, but what is the lesson you're teaching your children when you give them something as a reward for throwing a temper tantrum? You're teaching them that if they want something, the way to get it is to be disrespectful, to whine, to complain, to be disobedient. And that's not the lesson we want to teach them. So you may get some short-term relief right now, but this problem is just going to grow. It's going to get bigger. The next time they want something, what are they going to do? Well, last time when I threw a temper tantrum, I got what I wanted. I'm going to do it again. So bribing does not help, especially in the long run. The third one here, this is the one I'm usually inclined to do, and that is spanking. Spanking is not usually helpful. And the older the kid gets, I think the less helpful it is. But in the heat of the battle, when the temper tantrum is going full swing here, if you go down and smack your kid with, give him a swat on the behind, what's likely to happen is your kid is likely to just bring the decibels up a whole lot more. He's going to get louder. He's going to get crazier. And so spanking in the heat of the moment like that many times doesn't work. But I have to admit, that's what I'm inclined to do. That's what I want to do, is I'm going to show that kid who's boss, you know. But you have to be careful. That doesn't always work. Usually doesn't. So what does work? Well, what most experts say is you need to, I didn't hear that, was it murder? Well, that has a short-term benefit, but there's a long-term disadvantage to that. We won't recommend that one. What does work? Isolate your child, especially if you're at home. Your kid starts going crazy. He doesn't like the food that you made him for lunch. He wants to watch TV show you don't want him to watch or whatever. Take him to his room. Have him sit in there by himself. Make sure there's nothing fun to do in the room. Okay? But your child needs some time to sit by himself and cool down and to realize that mom and dad aren't going to play this game with him. They're going to nip it in the bud, right? They're gonna put a stop to this real quick. He's going to his room, and he's perfectly welcome to come out as soon as he calms down, but not a minute before that will he come out of his room. Maybe it's send him to the backyard or wherever, whatever works in your house. Put your kids someplace where they're by themselves, there's no distractions, there's not a whole lot of anything fun to do, and they can sit in there until they calm down. But you've got to resolve to yourself that you are going to put a stop to temper tantrums today. You're not going to wait till next week to start it or even tomorrow. Today is the last day of temper tantrums. Tomorrow there will be none. And that, I can see what you might be thinking is, well, that all sounds great, Steve, when we're at home, but where do kids love to throw temper tantrums? When you're out in public, at the grocery store, at the restaurant, or whatever. Grocery stores are the worst, because they see all the stuff that they want, and they want it now, and no, we're not buying that. Or you go to Walmart, and they want the toys on the toy aisle. I don't care if it costs $50, I want it right now. And you tell them no, and then they throw themselves down on the floor, and they kick and scream and yell. Now you got a big problem on your hands, and what do? You can't send them to their room, because you take a wooden spoon with you to Walmart. They've got a whole section of wood spoons. If you forgot yours, you can just get one there. Well, yeah, I have to catch our spanking lesson that we had last week. The grocery store is trouble. Anytime you're out in public, this is a battleground where you are at a disadvantage. Your kid clearly has the upper hand, because what's going to happen? As soon as your kid throws a temper tantrum, everybody's going to go and look right at you, and then you can just hear what they're thinking. Why can't that person get control of their kid? What goes on at their house? You know, and you're just thinking all kinds of terrible things that they're thinking about you. And so you're abusive. Yeah, right. Another thing you think about is, boy, that kid needs a good popping on the rear end, but if I do that, am I going to get thrown in jail for doing that? You know, what are people going to think? I don't know what to do. Well, the first step in handling temper tantrums in public is you got to make sure you've handled them at home. And if temper tantrums are still going on at home, you pretty much have no shot of winning the battle in public. So you've got to get control of your kids' temper tantrums at home first. The second thing you want to do is you got to realize, what is the kid wanting when he is throwing a temper tantrum? He wants his way. And he's going to do this by trying to get attention drawn to himself, especially from you, the parent. He's trying to manipulate you. And so what you can do is just start walking away. If the kid's throwing a temper tantrum, you got to, you know, buck up, have some courage, forget about what other people are thinking of you, and let's start walking away. This works really good when kids are little, because they want to be close to mom and dad. Now, you walk away. If that means leaving a grocery cart full of stuff in the grocery store, that's fine. They have more groceries next week. You can come back and get what you need. Start or go to a different store. But walk away, and don't give your child the attention that your child wants. Keep an eye on them. You know, don't run for the door. But as you get further and further away, all of a sudden that kid's gonna realize something. His gravy train is leaving, and he better get on board here before it's gone. And so don't give your child the attention that he needs. Now, if this is a recurring problem, maybe some prep time when you're in the car or heading to the grocery store would be good, and tell them about the behavior that's expected. But be careful about saying, if you're good, if you don't throw the temper tantrum, I'll give you some fantastic great gift, okay? You know, bribing again is not what you want here. You want them to be good because you told them to be good, not because they think they're going to get some great big prize. So you can walk away from your child slowly, keep an eye on the child, never let them get out of your sight, but don't give them the attention that they're so desperately wanting there. Temper tantrums, they're trouble. I really don't like them. Next one is dinner time. Proverbs 27, verse 7 says, "He who is full loathes honey. He hates honey. But to the hungry, even what is bitter tastes sweet." This one is going to help you a lot with dinner time here. First things to do for dinner time, fighting the dinner time battle, eat as a family. So many times in America, we don't eat as family anymore. We got four people in the house, they eat at four different times, they're all munching, snacking, there's not a real meal. Let's eat as a family. Let's eat at the dinner table. Your ottoman in front of the TV does not count as a dinner table. There is a dinner table. Eat at it. Get the family together. Use your manners. You're not a bunch of animals, not a bunch of pigs at the pig trough, okay? Use some manners. Please pass the potatoes. You know, thank you. You're welcome. But the dinner table is the last place where an American family can actually build relationships with each other. That's a time for us to sit down, look at each other in the eye, talk to each other, talk about ideas, talk about what happened during the day. Just make some conversation. And that will be a great way for helping build relationships with your kids. Remember, we had a phrase, we mentioned a phrase that Josh McDowell has come up with: rules without relationship lead to rebellion. The dinner table is a prime spot for you to start developing relationships with your kids. So use it. Eat together as a family. Eat at the dinner table. Use your manners. Now, let's get to the tricky spot. Your kid doesn't want to eat the food that you've given him. He doesn't want to eat all of it. He doesn't like it. Whatever. Okay, well, I think we've all ran into this. And as much as I've tried to do it, you can't really force them to eat the food. I've tried to open their little mouth, and it doesn't work very well. You know, they strong jaw muscles, and you might get a finger bit off in the process. So you really can't force your kid to eat. They've got the upper hand here. So what can you do? Well, as your kids are getting older, even when they're as young as 3, 4, 5 years old, start letting them put the food on their plate so they can start getting an idea of the size of portions that they want. Now, they're going to need some guidance. They made you to dip it out for them, okay? And it can't be that they just want a big pile of mashed potatoes the size of Mount Everest. You know, you've got to spread it around. But you can say, hey, we're going to have some green beans. How many green beans would you like? My kids will say 2, you know. You're going to have more than that. But get them involved in the process. They need a well-balanced diet, you know, so they can have a little bit of everything. But don't fix them stuff that you know they hate. If they don't like those mushy, overcooked peas, I don't like those. You know, don't fix those because, you know, find something else that they do like. But, you know, you can do that and it can still be healthy and nutritious. But get them involved in the process so they start understanding how much food that they can eat. What's a reasonable portion? Many times we put on our we load up our kids' plate with the same amount of food that we would eat. Well, there's no way they're going to eat all of that. And so what is that teaching them to do? It teaches them to either, one, to overeat, or two, I don't have to clean my plate. Neither one of those is a good thing. So we need to understand my 5-year-old doesn't eat nearly as much food as I do. So let's go easy with that. Now here's a question that drives me nuts. How many more bites do I have to eat? You know, they come up with a plate of half-eaten food. How many bites do I have to eat? And it's that whiny, complainy question. My kids quit asking me that because I said, I don't know, however many bites it takes you to clean your plate, that's how many you're going to eat. They don't like that. You know, oh, man. And they walk off, you know, because they've seen other friends do this and the other friend's parents, oh, 3 more bites. And it doesn't matter how much food's on the plate, it's always 3 more bites. Okay, again, you're teaching your kid that they don't have to clean their plate. All right, so put on a reasonable portion of food. You can start getting them involved in the process with some guidance and explain to them, hey, you can always come back for more. You can always have seconds, but whatever you put on your plate, you're going to eat. All right, and then that way they can start understanding what's going on here. Now, Junior starts whining and complaining. I don't like chicken. Of course, he ate a tremendous amount of chicken yesterday. It's just today, for some reason, he doesn't want to eat it. It's not that he really doesn't like it. And what are you going to do? He starts whining, complaining. Well, here's a tip. It's kind of drastic, but it's holding your kid accountable for his choice. He says he doesn't want to eat it. No problem. Throw it in the trash. Your supper's over. You're done. You don't want to like the food we give you? You're done. Here's the tip. The key to making this work. There will be absolutely, under no circumstances, any snacks between now and the next meal. Proverbs 27:7 says, he who is full loathes honey, but to the hungry, even what is bitter is sweet. You will find that when your kid is hungry, the range of food that he likes greatly increases. He is much more likely to eat what you put in front of him. Your kid is not going to starve to death by missing one meal or missing half of a meal, okay? It's not a big deal. There's plenty of stuff there to keep him going for a few hours. So anyhow, you don't have to whine and complain. And if he starts whining and complaining, you don't have to beg and plead with him or bribe him or anything like that. It normally doesn't work. And what is it teaching him? It's teaching him to whine and complain when you reward him with something. So don't do that. Just throw his food in the trash. And he doesn't get any snacks. And next meal comes around, he's going to be much more interested in eating what you put in front of him. Bedtime battles. This can be a real trouble spot for many people. First of all, elementary age children need at least 10 hours of sleep a night. They don't need, you know, 8, 7, 8. That's not going to do it. They need 10. Daryl's going to talk to you about how much your teenager needs. But we have a country of sleep-deprived people. Children are sleep-deprived, especially in the junior high and high school ages. Adults are sleep-deprived, too. If your kid is getting plenty of sleep at night, 10 hours of sleep, he's going to be much easier to get along with. A lot less whiny, complainy, a lot healthier, too. Not as many trips to the doctor. So how do you do this? How do you get them to get that much sleep? When it's time to go to bed, you need to create a routine that your child can count on. It needs to be the same thing happening every night at the same time every night. So for us, it looks like this. Turn off all the TVs. That's step number one. Let's cut out the distractions. Turn off the TVs. Then it's bath time. Then it's put on your pajamas. Brush your teeth. We say a prayer. Do a devotion. Tuck them into bed. And then the key, whatever you've done before, however you do your routine and whenever you do it, this last one is the key. Leave the room. Especially if you've got young children. You leave the room. There's no rocking them to sleep, singing them to sleep, laying in bed with them. Leave the room. And what's even more helpful is close the door. Now, to many mothers, this is the same as killing your kid. Okay, it's not that bad. We went through this with Drake. We would put him down when he was still in the crib. We would change his diaper, give him a bottle, put him in his crib. He would be quiet for about 5 minutes, and then he would start to cry. And what's the first thing you want to do as a good parent, right? Well, is he okay? Is he dying? Did a scorpion attack him? You know, probably not, okay? But you want to run in there and make sure he's okay. And what happens is you're teaching him that you're always going to come in here. So with Drake, I told the vet, I'm tired of this. We are done with this. Nothing is wrong with that kid. He's fine. And so I had to kind of block the door for a little bit. And he screamed and cried for about 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden it was over. Next night, put him to bed, no crying. Next night, put him to bed, no crying. He's fine. He goes to bed fine now. But it takes that one time where you say, I don't care how long you're going to cry, you're fine. And I'm not going in there. So once you leave the room, don't go back in. If your kid gets older, he's sleeping in a bed and he gets up and I want a drink and I want that, tell him to go back to bed. You don't tuck him back in. You don't go through the ritual. You already did that once. He can go back to bed and take care of himself now. So if he does start coming, if he does come out and he's whining and crying, you got to be pleasant to him, but firm. Screaming and yelling at him doesn't really help the problem any. Now, also you might have kids that as they get older, they sleep in a bed together. You got siblings and they sleep together and they go to bed quiet enough at first, but then the fun starts happening. Well, they need to learn that you're going to put a stop to that too. So you can do a couple things. There's a couple things you can do. The main goal here is eliminate the fun. It's not fun to sit at the kitchen table quiet at that time of night. So, you know, take them down there. You guys are going to sit table until you can be quiet. Put them in the backyard. Do something. But there's where the scorpion comes in. But it doesn't matter how hard they cry, you're not going to go out and check on them. No, seriously, though, you need to find a spot. You can set them in that and tell them, you know, you're going to sit there until it's quiet. But the main thing is don't play their game. If you run in there 100 times telling them, this time you better be quiet, this time you better be quiet, it's not doing anything. It's not accomplishing anything. Last one, and I got to hurry so I can give Daryl some time. Talking back. Who likes a smart mouth kid? It's right up there with temper tantrums, isn't it? Oh, boy. There's that smart mouth kid. That's bad. Philippians 2:14 says, do everything without complaining or arguing. As parents, our goal is to raise our kids to be a responsible adult. And as Christians, to be a good Christian adult. We need to teach them how to do that. They need to learn to do things without complaining and arguing. So, number one, never accept smart mouth behavior. Kids are going to try this when they're little. That's going to continue as they get older. You got to put a stop to it. Never, under any circumstances, accept smart mouth behavior. Even if the kid is, you know, you're kind of having fun, and the kid's not trying to be mean necessarily, but he says something disrespectful, it's time to step in and say, you've crossed the line. I know you didn't mean it, but that kind of talk is not going to be allowed. There are going to be other times where they do mean it, and we'll talk about that in a second. So where are kids learning smart mouth behavior? Are they learning it from TV? Possible. There's a bunch of shows out there where the kids smart mouth their parents all the time. That's most sitcoms. Most kids' shows, a lot of them on Disney Channel even, are like that. So no more TV shows like that. They don't get to watch shows like that anymore. But one that you can really control is how do you talk to your spouse? Do you smart mouth your spouse? Are they learning it from you? I see people looking at each other, but I won't say their names. Do you smart mouth your kids? You know, are they learning to talk back to people? Because they see it happening all over in the house already. They're just the last people to start doing it. Watch yourself. Number three, maintain your composure. This is a tough one, because if you're like me and the kids smart mouths you, it's, you know, the steam starts going out the ears real quick. Maintain your composure. It may be that your child needs some alone time again. He needs to sit in his room and think about what he said. Now, and the and if you want to put some plastic scorpions in there in the room, you know, that might help. But your kid may need some alone time, especially if he's really little. Now, there will come times where your kid stands toe-to-toe with you and looks you straight in the eye, and he knows full well what he's saying, and it's a smart mouth remark. Then it's the time in our house where the spanking comes into play. And if you weren't here last week, we talked about how to properly administer a spanking and when it's for. But to recap, it is for a time when a child is willfully disobedient, willfully defiant. He is saying, I am in charge and not you. And he's looking you straight in the eye. That needs a swift and direct response. So a SWAT may be in order, especially if your child is 7 years or younger. We talked about before how the older your kid gets, the less effective spanking is, and you need to go to something else. So that's it in a nutshell. Daryl is now going to talk about how to deal with your teenagers.
Bigger scorpions, that's a good idea, yes. I'm a little bit concerned by Steve's point number four on bedtime battles about the fun noises in the bedroom. I'm just going to leave that alone, but it made me a little bit nervous, so I'm glad he clarified what that is. Anyhow. Okay, adolescence and power. How many of you have an adolescent or have been one? Okay, that was a gimme. You got to raise your hand on that. Have you ever noticed that they want all the power they can get? Okay, that's normal. But we have to remember that it is combustible. You're combustible and they are. You put those two things together in a closed environment, we can have an explosion. So it's very important that when I hit that button, it changes screens. And it's not doing so, so let me see if it needs. It may have gone to sleep on me. Anyhow, we'll keep going. I'm sure we'll get it fixed. First thing you've got to determine is, who are you in this situation? It is important that you remember what your role is, because you are a person of authority in this situation. We're going to go to Ephesians chapter 6. And everyone in the room loves the verse 3. And excuse me, actually 1-3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Everyone loves that verse, and everyone threatens their children with it. You want to live a long time? You got to obey me and honor me. But we don't typically like verse 4 that much. It talks about fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Can anyone give me an idea of what they think exasperate means? That's could be it. He's a pastor, by the way. Yes. Rules for no reason.
Yeah.
Okay. It's yes, ma'am. Teasing. Exactly. Depending on the child, that can be very, very frustrating, because they may feel that they're not being taken seriously or they're not being given any respect. The thing you have to remember is on your blanks there, first and foremost, you're a steward. As a parent, you've been given a stewardship over your children's lives. You have a job to do, and you will answer for how you do. God has given you the responsibility of shepherding their heart and leading them to Him. Do not take this lightly. It is your responsibility to paint a good picture of Jesus. It's your responsibility to paint a good picture of the church. It is their responsibility to live that out. But it's your job to make the walk of faith or the leap of faith a very easy one to take. And that takes place. My father used to tell me, son, you're going to build your teenager at 2, 3, and 4. You handle 2, 3, and 4 well, you won't have trouble with 13, 14, 15. This is not making the assumption that you have done everything right, but it is going to make things a lot easier if you have. Number two, I don't know if I spelled that correctly, but you are El Jefe. You are the boss. You were not elected. You've got to take on your authority position well. Too many times we relinquish the authority we've been given and we allow our children to rule. We do this for many reasons. One, you're tired. I travel a lot. Sandra gets shafted because she has to take on the kids at home by herself, and she gets tired. And eventually they wear her down. They're like sandpaper, okay? She has had to many times remind them, hey, I don't have to listen to you whine. Go away from me. I said no. She's not trying to be popular. She's trying to be a parent and a leader, and she does a great job of it. Number three, you are a non-elected, lifetime-appointed, benign dictator, okay? What that means is they did not elect you. They cannot remove you from power unless you allow them to. You cannot afford to give up your role as a leader. You are not called to be liked. You are called to be respected and worthy of their respect. It is critical that as your child grows up and matures, that you begin to relinquish your control over certain situations, but not your authority. There is a huge difference there. It is okay for me to give my kids decision-making power over situations, but they have to remember I still have the authority over that situation. If I want to take that control back because I haven't handled it well, I can and will. As they get older, they need to be able to make decisions and face consequences for the decisions, but I'm still in authority over them. And they have to understand the difference between control and authority. Who are they? Well, first, they are grasping for power and pushing boundaries, and that's normal and it's healthy and that's what you want. I love to see my kids trying to take on more responsibility. They fail sometimes. It's okay. Let them push the boundaries, but let them understand the boundaries are still the same as they were when they were young. They're still rigid. They don't move every day. You're the boss, and you're not going to apologize for being the boss. Make the boundaries stick. Secondly, your children are not trustworthy. I don't mean that to be funny, but I get really frustrated by kids being put in situations to handle a responsibility they're not equipped to handle yet. I see parents letting their kids decide what movies they're going to go watch. They have no idea what's in that movie. Oh, yeah, I just dropped them off at the theater. Letting 12, 13-year-old kids go on dates. You're going to trust the decision-making power of a 13-year-old girl alone with a boy, and you're going to be surprised by the outcome. Your children hopefully have been given good instruction, but they are what my sophomore English teacher called wise fools. That's what sophomore means, literally, wise fool. It means somebody who's been given knowledge but hasn't had the time in life yet to know how to apply the knowledge. It is your job to lead. Leadership means you can't go there. Yes, I understand. I trust the fact that you know right from wrong. I get this a lot in our home. What, you don't trust me? My answer is no, I don't, because I was your age. And I made stupid choices because I was given too much authority instead of having control. Again, there's a difference between control and authority. And third, your children are not in control. In the book For Parents Only, 70% of the children surveyed, these are not church kids, by the way, they were a cross-section of the nation, 70% said, I wish my parents would have enforced boundaries more consistently and more frequently and did not try to be my friend. It is critical, even though they're not going to admit it to you, that you stand there rigid and quit worrying about their impression of you and their opinion of you. Because your goal should be them before the throne. Their marriage making it. them not pregnant at 16. That's what's important. The fact that they don't like you today, not that big a deal. Because you've got to remember, you're the leader. You're not their friend. You're not their buddy. You can be friendly, but you still have to remain in control. So let's talk about some power plays. What are the types of power plays? You have a passive power play. Even as a teenager, we run into this situation in our home where it's trying to get around the rules by having a good excuse or reason that can't be avoided. Some of those are staying up late to do homework, take a shower, cleaning the room. I wish that was the excuse in our house, cleaning the room. Or reading. My kids are notorious for, I didn't have time to take a shower before 9 o'clock and blah, 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 blah. Then go to bed stinking. Sorry. You knew what time you had. You're coming to me at 8:55 saying, I'm going to take a shower real quick. I know that means 9:45 bed. We don't do that. With Zach, that's okay. He's like, cool, dude. No shower. Woo-hoo! Not so cool with a daughter, okay? You have to enforce those rules, though, because that's a type of passively trying to get around a rule. Staying out late, again, due to homework or a friend really needed me or needed to talk or some school team function that requires my attendance. Set your rules. I'm not going to tell you what your rules have to be because your child and your home are going to be different than mine. But once you make that rule, stick to it. Do your child the favor of making a rule and actually living up to it. They will appreciate that far more than you'll ever realize. Now, it's important that you also structure those rules around your kid. If it is a situation about school performance, if you have two children, one's just a natural straight-A student and the other one struggles, do not expect the struggling child to constantly live up to the straight-A student. It's not fair. You couldn't do it, neither can they. Make your rules applicable to who they are. Respect them enough to know your child. But always expect their best performance. Is that clear on the difference between the straight A's and everything? Because we run into that in our home. Shelby is a great student. She hates it when I talk about her, by the way. So, but we've had to adjust the fact that she just loves school. Zach is a boy. Not so much a fan of school, but loves playing football. So guess what the carrot is, Zach? Anything below an 80, we don't play football. It's amazing how well he does in school whenever that's held out in front of him. Okay? Okay, here's the one that's most important, the in-your-face power play. This is willful disobedience of a direct command. This absolutely cannot be tolerated, and the consequences must be immediate and proportional. This will likely not be appreciated, but it is your job. It is critical that the father leads in this. You do not have the right to demand respect for you as the man of the house and not demand the same respect for your spouse. That doesn't matter if you're still married, by the way. If that's your child's mother, whether she's still your wife or not, they do not have the right to degrade her. And as the man, it is critical that you set that tone in your home that, listen, hotshot, you're not only going to not backtalk me, but you backtalk my wife, we're going to have a real serious communication problem here. And you're not going to enjoy it. That is one of the most frustrating things I have is whenever I see my kids disrespect my wife. And I've had to tell them, listen, you're leaving in a few years. I like her more. They need to understand that. I love her because I picked her. She said, yes, you just came along, okay? So, at this stage in adolescence, it is critical that we are addressing attitude more than action. I can scare my kids into obeying me, but I want them to start making choices based on the more overriding moral feature of that choice. So we have to address that. Now, they're going to try to do things like embarrass you in front of their peers or yours and hold that over your head as a form of extortion. Don't allow it. Stop worrying about the impression of other parents over you. Start worrying about the impression of your children's children. And start leading. And when they try to embarrass you, take control of the situation. Sometimes that requires embarrassing them. It's not fun, and we can all joke about it, but you know what? As much as I try to joke with my kids about this kind of stuff, it breaks my heart to have to break them in front of their friends or other adults. It shouldn't be something that we find fun to do. We can make it funny, but it shouldn't be something we try to make fun to do, but sometimes they need that. They need to be reminded of the fact that, you know what? I'm not in control here. My parents are. And refusal to adhere to rules about cell phone usage, household duties, level of performance at school, clearly defined and structured around their ability. If they know that they have X number of minutes on the cell phone or that it has to be turned off at 10 o'clock, take the stinking thing away if they break the rules. Don't give them warnings. Because what you're also teaching them to do is obey the rules of their future employer. I'm assuming at some point you want them on their own buying their own groceries, correct? The way that you build a successful person is they learn how to live by rules. Rules are, if that phone is used past 10 o'clock, you lose that phone, period. You look at your cell phone bill. There's a phone call at 10:59. Guess what? Junior doesn't have a cell phone. Household duties. You were supposed to make your bed and clean your room before you went to school. I got up late. Not my problem. One of my employees this week heard this, and it's become my new phrase. Sandra already hates it. That sounds like a you problem, not a me problem. I love that. So my kids will grow to hate it. But the fact of the matter is, if the rules are clearly set out, enforce them. They want it. They may not appreciate, well, okay, let me take the may out of that. They will not appreciate it now. But if you set out clearly defined rules, you enforce those clearly defined rules, when they get out on their own, obeying the rules of their employer won't be a problem. They're going to succeed in life. And then level of performance at school, that goes to attitude. It simply goes to attitude. If mediocrity is accepted, then they will live a mediocre life. Expect the best. Remind them of who you are. Go over the hierarchy of the home. Who makes the rules? You do. Who gave you that authority? God. If they don't like who's in authority over them, let them take it up with him. And encourage them to do so. Tell them to pray for you as a parent. Show some transparency. Hey, I'm in control here, but I don't know everything. I pray over your life. I challenge you. Adolescents can handle this. Pray over mine. Just pray about each other. Remind them of who they are. Remind them of the fact that you are the provider. You can take stuff away. It's all yours. They have no rights to ownership. It's a hard thing to say. I hear a lot of parents say, well, I don't want to invade their privacy. It's your home. It's your job to make sure that everything in that home is ran in a way that the Holy Spirit would be welcome there at all times. So you got to establish that rule. And finally, keep a sense of humor. I can tell you when my kids are winning, whenever they get me to yell. Sometimes that doesn't take a lot of effort. But they win when I yell. If I can laugh while we address a situation, even though they're probably not at this point, it's okay because I've kept my control and they're no longer taking control of that situation from me. So it's critical as you parent an adolescent, we kind of ran through that quickly, but it's critical as you parent an adolescent that you remember your charge by God. Ephesians tells us to train them up in the fear and teaching of the Lord. Why? Because that goes right back to the first three verses of that chapter. So they will honor us. Now then, we don't want that honor for our sake. We want it for their sake because it's the first commandment with what? A promise. So that they will live long and prosper on this earth. Okay? Let's give away the book. Let's make this for parents who have a child less than 10 years old. Okay? Name the last four vice presidents. Someone, raise your hand. Three vice presidents. Graduate of Santa Fe High School. Yes, sir. No, it's not. Cheney, Gore, and Bush is not the last three. Who was Bush's vice president? You were going to say that, weren't you? I saw that in your eyes. He had quail all over him. There, he wins. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for today. Thank you for your word that is complete and gives us everything we need for life and godliness. I pray, God, that we would be blessed by not only your presence in this service, but that our homes would be blessed by your presence there, and that we would lead as parents, preparing our children to build your kingdom. In your heavenly name, amen.